What's up, No Nation? I'm Jesse from Plant the Spear, and we have a top 25 matchup sold out at night in Doak Campbell Stadium. Homecoming, it's number 4 Florida State versus number 16 Duke Blue Devils. And I'm here with Michael from Plant the Spear as well. We're going to talk about this game. We're going to talk about what we saw against Syracuse last week. And this is just a big episode because this is a massive game for Florida State. I mean, it's been a while since we've had a ranked matchup at home. Obviously, you know, we had LSU, but that was neutral site.
Yep.
So this is a big one. Michael, how are you?
I'm great, man. I'm really excited for this weekend. I mean, it's going to be my first ever like ranked versus ranked game at Doak Campbell Stadium. I'm thrilled. I'm pumped. And let's go. Let's go, Noles.
Yeah, man. If I could unsell my tickets to this game, I would totally unsell them. I banked on Miami.
Can I get those tickets back, please?
Exactly. Like you can have the money back. I'll even give you some on the side. It's just I banked on Miami and not this one, and then this one turned out to be the big one. So yeah, I really wish I had I could unsell those tickets. But this is a huge one, man. It's a big game, and we're gonna talk about it. We're gonna do a full preview for you guys. We're gonna get down into it. But first off, we are gonna talk about some things last week. We know Florida State got a dominating win over Syracuse. It's kind of the game we really wanted to see them play. They had one slow quarter out of four, but they played really good for three quarters.
Yep.
This was, to me, the best game of the season by the defense, and it couldn't have came at a better time when you're talking about Duke, who, on the one hand, we don't know how good their offense is going to be. A lot of that depends on Riley Leonard. But I really liked what I saw from the defense. That was my big takeaway. They had a dominant day. And then, obviously, I mean, you can't talk about this game without mentioning what Keon Coleman did, an absolute machine of a player. Yeah. So give me some of your thoughts. Was there anything that after you watched the game again that you went back and saw that stood out to you?
Yeah. I think, again, like you said, man, the defense played, I mean, just absolutely lights out. I mean, gosh, Schrader, the running backs, I mean, they really, Allen, I mean, they just had nothing. They could do nothing. And the defense was in position. I mean, it was great to have Akeem Dent back. I mean, you saw just the communication from the secondary with him back in there. I mean, they were aligned right. You know, they missed a couple tackles here or there. I think Syracuse was, when I went back and watched, that one long run they broke was, you know, a guy was misaligned where he should have been. And other than that, though, I mean, it was just phenomenal. It was just incredible. I was telling you offline that one of the clear ways we knew that Florida State was just dominating was, you know, at second half, first possession for Syracuse. It's like 3rd and 10. And Dino Babers and them, they call a run, not a draw, to see if they could get like to get some yardage, to see if they could like crack it. Like they literally called a regular run play up the middle, knowing it was going to get stuffed as it had been the whole game, basically as a way of saying, we trying to get out of here.
Yeah, he's trying to get back on that plane and get back to New York. He's like, it's too hot to be standing out here taking this butt whipping on the sideline in Florida.
That's
so
right.
That's funny. Right. Yeah, and I think like they really just had their way with Syracuse. It was never really a game. And I think you bring up a good point, too, about Akeem Dent being back. When you look at the last two games, especially against Virginia Tech, too, only 107 passing yards in that one. This was just where, like, our biggest concern was really, is this secondary going to be able to get it together? Right. And we knew that when Akeem Dent went out, the biggest thing really, I think, was not so much to play on the field, but the veteran leadership on the back end of making sure everybody's where they need to be. Because when you lost Jamie Robinson after last year, and then you had Shaheem Brown who comes in and had a great game, by the way, had a great game.
Oh,
he's still a young guy. So now you get that quarterback of your secondary back, and you've seen the secondary play a lot better the last two weeks. And they're going to need him going forward because you have some good passing teams coming up. So any other takeaways on that game?
Yeah, I thought we're going to talk about the defense and we'll get to the offense. But real quick I just thought the defense played so much more freer. Like they triggered when they were supposed to. I saw on the replay watching back, there was very like little hesitation of not knowing where to be, not knowing what gap to feel, not knowing what assignment or leverage to have. I mean, they just played like their hair's on fire. Like it was almost like they just knew what was coming, and so they could just play. I mean, it was incredible. I thought the offense, you know, again, that second quarter was, you know, it, even watching it back, you saw there were some misassignments. Mike Norvella talked about that in his Monday press conference. There were some misassignments there, not just on the offensive line, but in the out wide as well. And so those caused some of the frustrations that you saw in the second quarter. I mean, Jordan Travis, I mean, you probably saw it on the TV copy if you're watching. He was clearly frustrated.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought outside of that, Keon Coleman, he was wearing the Pete Up shirt, you know, the Peter Warwick shirt, and he played like him.
Right. It was very fitting that he had that on in warmups. And that was something I meant to mention on the post game, was just the fact that, like, you come out in that shirt and everybody knows P Dub. There's a standard at Florida State at wide receiver. Right. If you're going to be an elite player, you got to live up to that standard. And really in that game, it was like, man, you could not have picked a better game to warm up in that shirt. And when I talk about we talk about the offense, I think that you do see some things where it's like they're just trying to break through. The things are there. Maybe there's some miscommunications, yep, but the plays are there. And there's just some frustrations of them getting on the same page. But I also think that, you know, when you have Johnny Wilson out and you're bringing in some new guys that haven't played a whole lot, you're still shuffling around on your offensive line. But I do think that what they were able to do on offense, especially running the ball, was big in that game because, you know, when they took on Virginia Tech, they ran well in that game, but it was like, okay, their run defense is terrible.
Right.
Syracuse, now we know they haven't played a ton of people, but their run defense was pretty good. And to see Florida State bounce back with a second dominating performance on the ground like that, you know, we talked about after the Virginia Tech one, it was like, okay, I don't want to say the running game is necessarily fixed and they're about to break off 200 yards in every game when you played a terrible run defense. But now that you saw what they did against Syracuse, I feel like they've got some things figured out.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I would say that I thought this game was a great game to work on some of those kinks. I mean, to get some of those players in. I mean, they have just the most successful teams in college football, at least over the last 15, 20 years. They're playing a high number of people. They're getting a lot of their players in to build that depth. And that's what you're seeing. You're seeing these games, and not even just in garbage time. I thought something was really cool and indicative of how much better Florida State has gotten is they're playing these young players in crunch time. I mean, you talk about Conrad Hussey. I saw him out there like early in the game when it was still like in doubt, maybe a little bit. You saw Nicholson, the true freshman linebacker out there. I mean, you're seeing these young players who are getting out there in crucial time, who are getting that game, so that when these upperclassmen, when they leave, these guys are ready to go. And so I thought it was a great game for a lot of that. I mean, Florida State did what it was supposed to do. It covered the spread. Right. It won. It dominated. And now we're going to play Duke.
Yeah, and I do think when you talk about the personnel out there, one thing I will touch on real quick, I do like that they are rotating more. I think they're keeping guys fresh, not only throughout a game period where you have fresh bodies in the fourth quarter, but throughout the whole season. I mean, when you look at the snap counts, that, you know, a lot of your starters, Fabian and all that, they really haven't played that much at all this year. So, you know, when you get to game 10, 11, 12 into the postseason, especially if you get Darryl Jackson back, like a lot of these guys, you're going to have fresh bodies there. Now, I will say what I was going to mention was, as far as Duke goes, that you did not have for Syracuse, it does look like they do expect Johnny Wilson to be back for this game.
Yep.
Also, Bless Harris is going to be back for this game as well. They said that he was pretty close to being ready last week. I think we talked about this before the game. I really do think when you looked at that game and what Florida State kind of felt like they were going to be able to do, I think they thought they didn't need him. So maybe they were available, but they just didn't need, there was no point.
Clearly they were like, okay, this is a week that we feel like we can actually rest you guys a little bit more. I think an emergency situation, Johnny could have played too as well.
Yeah.
I wasn't super concerned about them not playing. What I am concerned about though, yes, great news that Johnny's going to play. Great that we're going to get Bless Harris back. But, Washington, the left tackle, well, he plays every spot in the line. There, Mike Norvell did not sound very confident in his Monday press conference about him playing. And I mean, I know we'll get into this with Duke, but man, if there's any concern I have playing Duke, believe it or not,
I know what you're about to say.
Duke has some real boys on that front line. And I still am not super comfortable with our offensive line just yet.
Right.
But if you had you had Harris, you had, you know, Roddick, you had, you know, Maurice Smith, you had Washington, and then you had Scott. Like, I think that's your line, but we just haven't, they haven't been healthy enough to get there. And so that if there's anything, yeah. I know we'll get to that, but that gives me some concern.
Yeah. And Darius has been kind of that Swiss Army knife. He can play literally every position. He's played very well this year in wherever you've asked him to play. I do think, you know, getting Robert Scott back and then now adding Bless Harris, so you can have two tackles there. Maybe you can even kick Byers inside to cover up some of what you need. And Keandre Jones has really been, he stepped up this year. So I think I feel good about the offensive line. But like you said, I just think it's not quite on the level that we saw last year. I think they do miss Dylan Gibbons and guys like that. But before we get on to the next segment, we will wrap up Syracuse real quick with our prize picks player of the game. So
let's go.
If you guys want to get in on daily fantasy, you know, sometimes it can be hard. You got guys out here that are doing fantasy sports and they got lineup creators and all this stuff. If you play with Prize Picks, all you have to do is play against yourself. They're going to give you a total. Will Jordan throw for 250 more or less? That's all you have to choose. So it makes it easy. Now, you guys can get a 100% deposit match up to $100 when you sign up with code SPEAR. So check that out.
Yeah.
So Michael, I hate to steal the thunder, my man. There's really, like, obviously it's going to stand out who I'm going to pick, and it's going to be Keon Coleman. When you talk about the player of the game, I probably, you know, if we could have like a co-player of the game, we'll just give it all to Keon, because, man, he showed out. He was the offense in this game. Now, you had a lot of running too, but when you talk about from the receiver position, he was unstoppable. I mean, 9 catches, 140 yards, a touchdown. And if that wasn't enough, then on special teams, he lit it up. 6 returns, 107 yards, long of 72, almost had a special teams touchdown. I mean, just an absolute monster performance. So I'm going with Keon Coleman for my Prize Picks player of the game.
Man, that's he was, I mean, every national championship team, you're looking at him, you're like, who's that one player that just like just takes over a game and does ridiculous stuff? And it's finally good to say we have that again in Keon Coleman. So I love it. I would say for my Prize Pick player of the game, that's what we're doing, right? I got that. Okay, good. I want to make sure. I'm going to go with the defense, and I'm going with none other than Josh Farmer. I mean, the dude had a beast of a game. The sack, the strip sack that he had against Schrader there, that verse picked up the fumble. I mean, he was in the backfield often. He had tackles for loss. I mean, he was just disruptive. He was just completely disruptive, and which is great because we almost didn't have him, you know, that whole little thing in the summer. But to see him just kind of grow, I mean, you know, kudos to, you know, the legend Odell Hagans. I mean, he's an awesome coach. And again, he's developed another just an incredible player. And so, mine's is Josh Farmer. Good job, guy.
Yeah, man. He's been dominant up front for a young guy, too. So I'm really excited about this whole defensive line, not just the guys we knew about, but the guys just really the whole thing I'm excited about. So, all right, guys. So let's talk about the big one. This is huge, man. This game is so important. And Michael, here's the thing. So when we go down the list like we did in the intro, top 25 matchup, battle for one of the top spots in the ACC. There's only three teams left that are undefeated in ACC play. Sold out, night game, homecoming, nationally televised. Mm. I've heard there's going to be somewhere in the range of 50 to 70 recruits on campus.
Yep.
If you had told me 2-3 years ago that this, you said, guess the opponent. Okay, it's Clemson.
Yeah,
it's Duke.
Like, it's Duke.
Where did this come from? I mean,
and this ain't a basketball game.
Exactly. Like, this is nuts, man. I mean, credit to Mike Elko, who's a great coach. I know people have mentioned his name at Michigan State. I hope he takes the job because he can get out of the ACC. Like, he's good, man. He had some top 25 defenses even at Wake Forest back in the day. But, man, I never saw – like, this is shocking that it's Duke. But this is where we're at. It's 2023, and Duke is the team to beat. And this is a big one.
Yeah, I mean, this is huge. And to your point about, like, if you would have blindfolded me, told me all that, and said who it is, I'm saying it's Clemson. I'm saying it's a non-conference opponent. I'm saying it's Miami, right? I'm saying I'm saying it's Florida, right? But I think in the era of the transfer portal, schools that aren't typically – national powerhouses will more often, normally a school like Duke might have a good season. Like last year they were 9-4, I believe. They might have one of those every 20 years. Right.
Right.
In the transfer portal era, that's probably now one in every 7 or 8 years, because Now, Duke has high academic standards, but now they can go get those really smart players who are actually really good too and pay them. Let's just be honest and pay them. And so, yeah, that's what you're seeing. Elko came from Texas A&M where he was a defensive coordinator, and he's brought over some of those players. Let's be real. Jimbo, I know he's the name that no one shall mention, but they've recruited some top players there. And so some of those players came over to Duke with Mike Elko there. I mean, when you watch this team, I mean, it's going to be a great game. I'll say that.
Yeah, and I think what you're seeing now with the portal is talent is spread thinner, more evenly. Like, you may not go take, say, not everybody's going to be a Keon Coleman, but you might get a Texas A&M guy who's a former four-star recruit, hasn't seen the field a lot, but been developed a few years, can be an impact player at Duke. And that's what you're seeing with these programs, whereas now, like, you don't have to live with what's on your roster. You don't have to live with the groceries. You don't have to cook with the groceries in the fridge. You can kind of order a little bit there on the side. You know, you can get some seasoning from the store and really kind of spice your roster up here. So
that's right.
It's and you got to give them hats off. And I will say, like, one of the biggest things, and this will lead into one of my keys of the game at the end, is, like, the thing about Duke that stands out to me is they are a very well-coached team. I think I saw after they beat Clemson, because, you know, it was the talk of the town at that point, I think they said something about they had two blue chip players on the entire roster, which is amazing that they're able to compete with the teams that they are with that. I don't want to say lack of talent, because we know players who don't come in with a high star ranking can still live up to the hype. Yep. They can still be great players. But I think when you talk about Duke, they don't make a lot of mistakes. They're not a very heavily penalized team in most cases. And so I think really when you look at it, especially when you talk about the Clemson game, you have to play a clean game of football or else they will capitalize on those mistakes and beat you. It's one of them where it's like, maybe you don't have the talent edge, but if you play a cleaner game, turnovers and things like that, penalties, I mean, it can change the game.
Well, I mean, if you go back and watch a tape on that Clemson Duke game, Clemson was driving the ball between the 20s. I mean, they were just eating it up. I mean, I know we'll get into the stats because you're the stats guy, but just give me this real quick, is that, you know, Clemson had 213 rushing yards against the number one defense in the ACC. 213 rushing yards.
Yeah.
So Clemson was going up and down. The reason why Clemson lost was they had a terrible field goal kicker and they turned the ball over when they got to the red zone.
Yep. Yeah, a lot of that loss was what had to do with Clemson. Now, that doesn't mean Duke didn't play well in that game.
Right.
And they didn't earn that win because they still had to go score and take advantage of those missed opportunities. But, you know, like we said, that's a lot to do with what Clemson did to themselves. And we're going to go through their schedule. We're going to give some thoughts on some of the games here. Because, like we talked about, and we'll get into this in just a second, but last week when we talked about Syracuse, we knew they kind of played a little bit of a Charmin soft schedule. They had a couple of tough games right before you with Clemson and UNC, and we saw those games went a lot differently. The thing with Duke, we both talked about this in our show prep, I think you really have to separate their season, and I'm going to go as far as three games here. I'm going to go first Clemson, then Notre Dame. I think those two have to be evaluated on their own. The third game that I throw into there is NC State, and the reason I say that is because while you're a much better team than NC State, it's your only legit sample set that you have with the backup quarterback. So there are some things. We can at least talk about the offense there, but leading into this game, obviously we got some storylines we got to talk about, guys. So the biggest one is whether or not Riley Leonard is going to be able to play or at least be close to 100%, because he's the heart of that offense, and if he doesn't play, I think it's going to go – not the way they hope. Now, they were able to beat up on NC State with the backup, but there's some fluky things in that game that we're going to talk about. So Riley Leonard, to me, is the biggest story. And really, you can talk about both quarterbacks because Jordan Travis has been banged up. Now, we know he'll be available. How healthy he is, we don't know. So you got kind of a battle of which quarterback can play and be at the highest percentage of health-wise. So just kind of give me your initial thoughts on what you think, whether they have Riley Leonard or whether they don't. And I think when you see the spread, 14 points, I kind of feel like they think he's either not going to play or he's going to be less than 100%. Because 14 points was a little steep when you look at last week was only 17, and I think 17 and a half against Virginia Tech, who's nowhere near as good as Duke is. So give me some of your thoughts on how you see that playing out.
Well, here's the thing I've learned about Vegas. Vegas knows stuff.
Yeah, they do. They pay a lot of money to know stuff.
They pay a lot of money to know stuff. So, yeah, when I saw that spread come out, I was really shocked, and I was like, they know they know something that we don't know, right? Which is they are banking on the fact that Riley Leonard is not playing, or he's literally going to be a statue in the back.
Yep.
That's basically what it is, right? And that severely hampers their offense, and it gives a clear advantage to Florida State. Now, if Riley, I'm not saying that if Riley Leonard was playing and he was 100% healthy, that it would be like, oh gosh, Florida State, like,
right, should be concerned.
But it does change the game. So, what I thought was interesting was if you go back and watch the Duke North Carolina game, if you watch like the little TV intro they do there, they had Mike Elko had Riley Leonard, you know, suited up and warming up. And I've been reading on Twitter this week, or X, whatever you want to call it, that a lot of people are like speculating, like, he's doing that. So he's trying to force Florida State to like prepare for both quarterbacks. And I thought, yeah, that's some gamesmanship, right? But a high ankle sprain, you know, the typical for an athlete, not just now for you and me, it probably takes like 2 years to get over. But for people, but for the athletes, I mean, it's like a 4 to 6 week deal.
Right.
And he was barely, I went back and watched it, he was barely putting any pressure on his foot when he was doing those Walmart passes. So, man, I would just, I'm going to put the percentage at 35% that he plays. And if he does, he's a statue. But I'll say this real quick. You know how this goes, right? Injuries versus Florida State. They're like, they tore their ACL. And it's like, oh yeah, we're not gonna see them. And literally on miracle Saturday night, the game starts and they're that person trotting out. Like, what voodoo have you been doing?
Right. They had an ACL transplant on Friday night and everything was good. Like, I know, man. It's crazy, you know. And I think you're right. And I think, like, when you talk about a normal person's healing time, that, you know, athletes can do crazy things and they can do wraps and braces. I just think when you talk about what Riley Leonard's game is, having that high ankle sprain is a lot different. You know, he's a mobile guy. Like, if I had a high ankle sprain, I can barely run to the mailbox without getting out of wind anyway. This is a guy who has to run around for four quarters because their offensive line is not that great. And we'll talk about that in the offense section. Yeah. But I do think that that is going to be something really to watch in this game, even if he does play, he's not at 100%. And to be honest, I feel like if they play him in this game, and I'm not a doctor, I'm not the coach at Duke, I don't know his status. It feels short-sighted to me. Yeah. If you play him in this game, it feels like you're trying to win this game, whereas if you just kind of took the tough cookie and let him sit for another week, you have a lot left the season to play for. So, you know, I'm going to leave that up to the Duke coaching staff, but that's kind of what it looks like to me. Because I tell you what, man, when I watched that hit, it was bad. I thought he broke his leg.
I thought so too. Yeah, it was bad. And the thing I would say to Mike Elko, if he's, you know, watching this, it'd be nice. Thanks. Subscribe, please. Look, man, if you lose this game, your season and your chances for an ACC championship game berth is not over. It's one loss, right? And so you're trying to play. The thing I would say to a coach is, like, you're trying to play for the long game. And if the long game is the ACC championship game, it's one. If you lose, it's one loss. Like, it's not worth having him play this game, get that re-injured, and now he's done for the season.
Right, and you get UNC later in the year, which if you win that game, then you have the head-to-head at only one ACC loss. So you would still make it in. Now, I think you do bring up a good point, too, though. I don't think Florida State was, like, on the ropes if Riley Leonard plays. I think the game would be a lot tougher, obviously. I still think Florida State would win this game. I'm, like, in the weird camp where everybody's like, oh, I hope he plays because I want them at 100%. I'm like, dude, I want to win. So, you know, it is what it is. And I was talking to my brother the other day, who's a Georgia fan. And it's like, man, if Georgia doesn't kind of look up and have an injury in Alabama and Jameson Williams, I believe it was, and then against Ohio State, where they had some guys get injured, they don't have two national titles.
That's correct.
Now that you're a year removed from that, what do you look back at? The fact that you got to celebrate two national titles, or that you didn't catch someone at 100%? So, like, you know, maybe I'm in the camp by myself here, but
I'm in the camp with you.
I'm taking every advantage I can get. Keeping on down the storyline. So we know Florida State, this is, like I said, it's surprising when you hear all this stuff about Duke, because Florida State is 21-0 all time against Duke, 19-0 if you take away some vacated wins. So you're hoping that they can keep that streak going. We know that Duke is a team that was able to beat NC State last week, even without Riley Leonard. I mean, NC State, they're really having a tough year there.
Yeah.
You know, now I will say the interesting thing about this, this is a big opportunity for Florida State. They have not beat a ranked team at home since they beat number five UNC 31-28 in 2020. They're 0-3 in ranked games at home in Doak Campbell Stadium since then. So this will be a big one to see if they can get over that hump and defend Doak there. That's going to be interesting. Now, when you talk about these two teams, Florida State, like we know, number four in the nation, 6-0 on the season, 4-0 in ACC play. Duke 5-1, 2-0 in ACC. Florida State's on a 12-game win streak. They're 3-0 at home this year. Duke is on a one-game win streak, and they are 1-0 on the road. Now, this was another big point when you're not talking about X's and O's. You're just talking about broad view of the game. Duke has played two really big games, Clemson and Notre Dame. They were both at home at night. They have not had – their only road game was at UConn. They're terrible, and they don't have a big stadium. So, like, it's different, man, when you have to go on the road. And the thing – this is what I said about LSU and Orlando. Like, you might not – the crowd noise might not affect LSU because they're used to it. But you don't have that on your advantage now. So, while Duke may not have had to deal with – they might not have, like – they only have a 40,000-seat stadium, I think it is. So, while they don't have an imposing home atmosphere – they, at least by being at home, don't have to deal with an atmosphere like a Clemson, like a Notre Dame. So I think that's going to be a big issue, especially if you have a backup quarterback going into the first tough environment that he's had to play in. So give me some of your thoughts on how much you think Doak will be an advantage in this one.
Well, I mean, you just ran through those, just 6-0, prime time. I mean, it's not just prime time. It's prime time with Chris Fowler and Kurt Herbstreit. Like, that's prime time, right? ESPN is literally sending its best crew to be there. So you're going to have an electric Doak Campbell Stadium. This is not 40,000 people. This is 79,000 plus people screaming and yelling. You got the war chant blaring all the time. I mean, you got all of it. And you may or may not have your star quarterback. If he even plays, he's not 100% healthy. Like, this is a different atmosphere than you've experienced as a ranked team. Like, you look at Duke's schedule last year, they didn't play anywhere near this competition.
It was soft last year.
It was soft last year. And this year, like you said, we played Clemson. They played Clemson and Notre Dame at home, at Duke, right? Their two biggest games. They played at Duke. And they came up short and won, and they won the first game of the year against Clemson. This is going to be a whole nother level. Now, let us make sure to say this. It's a Mike Elko coach team. They will be ready. They're going to come, and they're going to give it their all. But I just don't think that they – it's a different atmosphere, and I think that will play a part. And we need – listen, Florida State fans, we need you to be there early. We need you to show up. We need you to act a fool, scream, yell. Don't get kicked out. But do everything you can. We're going to be the 12th man this weekend.
Yeah, and I really feel like the atmosphere around this game, people know it's important. People know it's big. You got Jermaine Johnson talking about he's coming back down for the game. So you're going to have some people on the sideline.
Special guest, too.
Right. I know everybody's been joking on social media asking if it's Taylor Swift, which would be funny. But I'm thinking it might be Dalvin Cook. You know, he's new to the Jets. I would like to see him come home. So. Yeah, I think it's going to be an advantage. And, you know, we saw last year against Boston College, one of the first sellout Florida State had in few years, where the players said on the field they couldn't hear to communicate. So, you know, when you have a game of this magnitude, any little advantage you can have, one miscommunication that leads to an interception or something like that could be the difference in the game. So, you know, I was at the 2011 Oklahoma game, and like if we can match that level of noise, it's hard for anybody because I couldn't hear myself think. But you know, when you talk about Florida State and getting a ranked win at home, I think this is a big test for Duke as well. Now, I know it's against a top five team. It's a big ask to pull off, especially with a quarterback that's injured or maybe not even available. But last time Duke beat, because I was interested in this, and we know this is a different Duke than in the past, but they've had a few good years. The last time Duke won a ranked game on the road was 2014. They won 31-25 over number 22 Georgia Tech. So that was... it's been a while since they've been able to beat a ranked team on the road. And the last meeting, now hopefully it goes this way again, but the last meeting between FSU and Duke, now you got to stretch back a little bit here. The last meeting when they were ranked was in the 2013 ACC championship game.
Oh, I remember that game.
I remember that because everybody was like, all right, Florida State, watch out. You're on upset watch. And they won 45-7. The game, it was over before it starts. So hopefully we can win a game 45-7. That would be nice.
I would love it because the last time we played Duke was during the COVID season. We had to change the game around. It ended up being the game at the end of the season game. We won like 56-35. Yeah, I'd like to put Duke back in its place.
Yeah. I did think that I have to give them credit because I thought Duke was going to take a step back this year just because they played such a soft schedule last year. They didn't really beat anybody until the end of the year where they beat Wake and UCF after they had kind of already collapsed. So see what they've done so far this year. I mean, you got to give them credit for the level that they're playing at. It's not the Duke of old. I didn't think they'd be quite this good this year. So it would be nice to see them kind of get smacked around one time at least this season.
Yeah.
So, and they still got UNC and stuff like that. But. Right. So let's talk about the team, Duke, and then we'll get into the offense and defense. So I'm going to start with some advanced metrics here. These are the F plus rankings. These combine S&P plus with FEI rankings. It's just all you really need to know is this is opponent and pace to play adjusted because it's hard to do just regular outright stats. So in this one, the F plus ranking as a team, they are 19th. Their offense is ranked 28th. Their defense is ranked 12th. They have a really good defense. Their special team is 61st. And when you talk about who they play two teams in the S&P top 50, and they are 1-1. They have split so far. Another thing I do want to touch on with these guys that really was one of the things that led to their success in 2021. They were plus, and this is something that if you read Phil Steele's preseason magazine, this is almost never repeatable. They were plus 16 in turnovers in 2021. Unreal. That's to have that. Of. That's unheard of. And so I think it was second behind USC, who had like 20-something, which is insane, who just got housed by Notre Dame. So
that's right.
That's making Duke look a little better now, too.
Yes, so, it is.
And this year, they're plus 3. So that has kind of come back to earth a little bit. Like we talked about, they're a really well-coached team, tied for 20th in penalties, 4.7 a game. So it's not going to be a very heavy penalized team like we've seen the last 2 weeks with Virginia Tech and Syracuse. And then we talked about that with Boston College as well. So as we look at the team from the outside in, again, they're top 20 in advanced metrics. And I will point out that the reason that I want to compare, like we were talking about before the show, the reason I want to pull apart those two games out of the rest of the schedule. So when you just look at comparing these teams, so keep in mind, they were 19th in the advanced metrics here. So they're 19th, 28th, and 12th. Yep. So when you look at comparing Florida State to the most similar teams on their schedule, this is what we did for the Syracuse game. So Florida State in those same F plus rankings is sitting 10th in team rankings. Notre Dame is at 11th. Clemson is at 14th. FSU's offense is at 12th. Notre Dame's is at 19th. Clemson's at 29th. Florida State's defense, 17th. Notre Dame, 9th. Clemson, 4th. So if you really want to compare that Florida State and Notre Dame, in advanced metrics, you're literally one spot apart. So that is a great sample set of what you think you might get in this game. So just talking about that, as we get ready to go into their schedule a little bit and talk about that, Michael, do you just have any kind of overall thoughts of the team as a whole and some where they fall in the rankings and is it well-deserved or is maybe some of this a little overhyped?
Well, I think it's a lot more deserved. But then I also think there's a little bit of hype. And here's what I mean. Like, Duke, when you watch them, I mean, they're a well-coached team, right? They're a well-coached team. They get to the ball on defense. They tackle well. They don't miss a lot of tackles. They're always in the right – they're almost always in the right place at the right time to make plays. I mean, on offense, when Riley is playing, I mean, he is dynamic. I mean, so – the ranking where they are, it's deserved. I want to make sure we give credit where credit is due. It is deserved. It's also a little bit hype because if you actually watch the game, since Notre Dame is the most comparable to what to Florida State and what Duke is going to face. I mean, if you watch the game, Notre Dame's offense basically struggled up until that point, right? And then you'll look at this USC game and think, oh, yeah, this makes Duke look better. It does to the average college football fan. But to those who know college football and watch the game, I mean, I think your local high school team could probably put 30 up on USC's defense, right? I think you and I could find 11 guys on offense, and we might be able to put up 10 or 15 on that defense. That defense is hot garbage, as Deion Sanders would say, right? And so Notre Dame's offense isn't as elite as what we saw against USC, which makes me curious. So I was curious about like how Duke has played against a really good offense. Duke has not played a good offense yet.
Yeah.
That would give me cause of concern if I was Duke. Like, oh man, Florida State is going to be the best offense we see all season until we see UNC, right? Because right. you could arguably say they might be equal yeah, or better right. than Florida State, right? And so, whoa. And I just, when I watch the game, again, against Clemson, against UNC, I'm sorry, against Notre Dame, both games, Notre Dame and Clemson, they're going up and down the field. They had no problems moving the ball. It was when they got into the red zone. And I will say Duke, I think they're, I went and charted, and I included Northwest because Northwest, I know they're like a high school team, but they're a Power 5 school. There are 45 drives that Duke's defense has faced. 45.
Sorry.
And of those 45 drives, Duke only allowed 13 to get into the red zone. That's 28% of the drives they face. So I think Florida State will be able to move the ball against them on offense. I mean, Notre Dame and Clemson's offensive line literally pushed. Just blew up those defensive lines.
Yep.
But they're opportunistic. That's what happens. They bow up when they get to the red zone. I also think FSU's defense is bigger and stronger. And you saw it clearly with Clemson and Notre Dame. Riley was running around a lot. A lot of it was design, but a lot of it also was he had to.
They could not block Clemson at all.
He could not block Clemson. And so I think just off the top, like, those are just some things to really think about. They're going to play well.
Yeah.
But I think the athleticism of Florida State, if Florida State comes ready for this game, should win out.
Yeah. And I think that they bring it to you. I mean, they get up in your face. When they played against Clemson, Clemson looked kind of flat and uninspired, and they brought it to them. So I will say that they play hard. So we'll run through their schedule real quick. We'll talk about, obviously, the first game, 28-7 against Clemson. We know Clemson had two fumbles inside the 10-yard line, two missed field goals in that one. Now, Duke's, you have to argue at the same time, a Duke muffed punt led to Clemson's only point. So they almost shut them out. But again, you're talking about a Clemson team that should have had more points than what they did. And I actually pulled to the side of pretty much every game here because of Riley Leonard and how important he is. Now, he's a pretty good passer. I won't say he's Drake May or anything like that, but where he's really dangerous is with his legs. And so I kind of pulled his rushing stats on everyone just to see like how big of a loss it's going to be if he's not there. So in that game, they had 199 rushing yards, 98 of them. And one touchdown was to Leonard. So again, he was the heart of their offense. And when you look at some of the better teams that they played, like Clemson had an 11% havoc rate in that. And havoc rate is tackles for loss, sacks, interceptions, basically big plays on the defense. So, you know, that's something to look at too. They've struggled against a better one. Now you talk about they scored on 42% of their drives. They had a pretty good game on offense in that one. They moved the ball on Clemson pretty well. I was surprised about that one. I just really think when you look at the Clemson game, it was a lot of what Clemson did to themselves, but they still moved the ball up and down the field. They still had opportunities. And I think that's really what I think I took away the most from that game was Clemson struggled to block Duke. They got pressured a lot in that game. And I have some stats we'll talk about in a second, but then you also talk about the Clemson defensive line was unblockable by Duke. And so my first thing was like, okay, well, if you got a mobile quarterback and we do, you can probably, you know, you can handle some things there against Duke. But at the same time, if you can eat up their offensive line, which I feel like our defensive line can do, you can have some success against them. So any thoughts on that Clemson game that really stood out to you?
Yeah, I thought when I watched it back, you know, as you said, Duke's defense or Clemson's defensive line was really, I mean, they were in the backfield. They were blowing up almost every play. They were in the backfield. I think the few times that Duke's offensive line was able to hold them was, you know, when Clemson would rush three on occasion. Sometimes they'd rush four and they would try to stunt and the offensive line were able to pick it up for a little bit. But most of the part, you know, Clemson, because as we saw in that game and then what we ended up seeing in the Florida State game was Clemson needed to rush at least five almost every time to cover up the secondary that was suspect, right? And it's weird to even say Clemson with those five-star athletes is suspect, but they were trying to get more pressure so that they could cover up what was happening on the back end. Well, you saw a lot of that. Now, I put our Florida State's secondary. I would say that they're, I don't know if they're more talented than Clemson, but they're at least more, they're better orchestrated. And right. so I would say that, look, I think that front four, I mean, I don't want Florida State to get away from being aggressive. They, because the aggressiveness has been awesome, but that doesn't always mean blitzing. It just means like get up on those receivers, right?
Right.
Especially if the backup quarterback is playing, make it hard for him to find wide open receivers. Get up on them. And I think our defensive line, I think they will continue doing what they're doing. They'll blow it up. They'll put that, they'll put Riley or the backup quarterback on the run. And if it's Riley, that should be an easy sack because he can't run much, right? If the backup quarterback, you know, make sure we tackle well. But I think that's what that was the biggest thing from the Clemson game. And again, of course, Clemson was moving the ball on offense. They shot themselves in the foot.
Yep.
Just be real.
And I will say that was not that I'm trying to make any excuses for Clemson, but it was game one under a new offensive coordinator. They, you know, now that they've got some things figured out, like we said last week, I don't think if you put Duke against Clemson in Death Valley the Saturday that they played Florida State, I don't think they win again.
Well, I'd also say too, really quick, is that if you played that game 10 times, you played the game 10 times at Duke, same context, Clemson wins 9 out of 10 times.
I would agree with that. And Duke's a good team. I just think it was, again, a lot of what they did, Clemson did themselves. So game two, we won't really talk about this too much. They won 42-7 over Lafayette, who is a 5-1 FCS team. But again, you're talking about a 5-1 FCS team. Game three, they beat Northwestern, who is currently 3-3 on the year, 38-14. We know that's a team that just fired their coach. They got all kinds of culture problems there, some transfer outs and things like that. So not too great there. Now, I will say the note that I had on that, Riley Leonard had 97 rushing yards and 2 touchdowns in that game. So, again, you're seeing if he's not available, how much of that offense he was responsible for. Game four, UConn, they beat 41-7. UConn had a breakthrough year last year, but it's just gone south fast for them. They're 1-5 on the year. Riley Leonard did have 30 rushing yards and a touchdown in that one, but he probably didn't even have to run that much.
Because basketball season started after game one for UConn.
Exactly. Like they're back to being a basketball school. Now, the game that we're going to really hyper-focus on is game five. They did lose 21-14 against Notre Dame, but we know that really that game came down to a 4th-and-16 stop. Like if they had got off the field, the game was over and they win. And so it was really close. Now, when you talk about that game, I don't think it was as close as the score let on. I think that there was – this is what I talked about when I said early in that this was going to be one of my keys to the game. And if you haven't already figured it out, it's limit the mistakes. It's play clean because Notre Dame almost lost this game because of a lot of mistakes. When you look at what they did – so just talking about they had a havoc rate of 13% compared to Duke at 6. They had a higher explosive play rate. They had a little bit lower success rate. They had a higher yards per play. They were moving the ball. The thing is, when you look at this, so Duke did have 2 turnovers and Notre Dame didn't have any. But Duke had some – or, I mean, Notre Dame, they missed a field goal, which Duke missed 2 as well. And that's something we're going to talk about too. But is really just the penalties they had on the drive-killing penalties in the red zone. They had one that turned a field goal attempt into a punt. They had a 3rd and short that got 3rd and long, then they got sacked, and then they weren't able to convert there. And so they had a couple, and then they also had to settle for a field goal, and they missed. So that game really could have almost been a 20-point game in the second quarter. Yep. And when you look at – when I went back and rewatched the Notre Dame game before we jumped on, like they started out bad. Riley Leonard had a terrible first quarter. Yeah, Notre Dame with 138 yards. Duke had 49 in the first quarter. Then when you look at the second quarter, Duke had 4 drives in the second quarter. 3 of them went for a combined 24 yards. The final drive went for 63, and 39 of those were Riley Leonard just running the ball. Design quarterback runs, he just made the most of it. So, again, he was really what kept them in that game. And then, like, they picked it up in the second half. That's, you know, they had 3 drives. One went for 75 and a touchdown. The other 2 went for 9 yards. In the fourth, they had 2 full drives, 35 and 80 yards. So really, when you talk about it, this is a very much boom or bust offense. They only scored on 17% of their drives, and then they had 12 total drives in the game, and 6 of them went for under 10 yards. So it's very much, and this is what we saw against NC State as well.
Yep.
And we'll talk about it in a second, but they're a very boom or bust offense. And so they kind of break big plays on you, but they're not overly great at driving the ball. I mean, in that game, they only had a 39% success rate. So give me some of your thoughts on takeaways on that Notre Dame game. What you saw, because like I said, I feel like they were, I mean, literally a yard or two away from winning the game. But if Notre Dame doesn't make so many mistakes, maybe that game's not even in that position.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, you watch, you go back and you watch it for yourself, and you clearly see Notre Dame dominated the game. Like, from a football leverage standpoint, there was not one moment of that game until towards like the end that you thought Notre Dame was going to lose this game. You're like, okay, right. you're like, Notre Dame just came off like a devastating loss to Ohio yeah. State, where they lost on literally the last second play, right? Their last play of the game. So you can understand the letdown of them coming back in and playing against Duke on the road. And you know that offense hasn't been great. But at the whole time, you're just thinking like, man, this game should be like, Notre Dame should be up like 21 points right now. Like, they should yep. be dominating this. But never once did you think that they were going to lose the game until obviously towards the end when Duke took the lead with like, I think it was like 17 to go in the fourth quarter. Duke was up 14-13. And you're like, oh man, Notre Dame's offense has been terrible. And their defense is causing some issues. So what's about to happen here?
Yeah.
And then of course, obviously, you know, Notre Dame goes on a 2-minute drive at the end there to win the game. And it was all Sam Hartman getting them down there and them running, and then that 30-yard run to score to win the game. And then, of course, Riley getting hurt on the previous drive there.
Right.
And so, to me, when I watched it, it made me feel better coming into this game. It's like
– It did, yep.
It was like, oh, like, this wasn't like Duke played, you know, lights out. Duke played right. the best they could in that game. You know, not lights out, but the best they could, and they still lost. Now, yep. you know, when you look at the Clemson game, if we're going back to that just for a second, you look at the Clemson game, Duke played the best they could, and Clemson gifted them the win, right? Yeah. And so I think with this Notre Dame game, like, yeah, they only allowed 4 of 12 drives to get into the red zone. They ran for 134 yards against Notre Dame. They ran for 189 yards against Notre Dame. They only passed. Riley only had 134 yards passing in that game.
Yeah.
So it was very clear that they were just going to run around and see what happens. And so I just think, again, Florida State, if you show up and you play assignment football.
Right. If you take advantage of the opportunities that are given to you, if you score in the red zone, which we know we saw, they just broke their 100% streak. And we know that had a lot to do with the play calling that we talked about on the post game show, which Mike Norvell owns some of that this week as well. So I think you'll get that cleaned up. But previous to that, they had scored on 100% of trips to the red zone. So you just have to take advantage. And I think points are going to be at a little bit of a premium in this game.
Yep.
You know, so maybe you don't push the issue. You take that field goal. You know, I'm not going to jinx Ryan Fitzgerald, but he's been doing great this year. So just talking about, like we said, when we wanted to extract those two games. So what I did is I have a couple of differences in those two games versus the rest of the other teams. So when you talk about Duke, so points per game against those two teams, they've scored 21. Outside of those two games against everybody else, it's been 36.3 points per game. Points per game allowed it's 14, so that still sounds pretty good. But if you look at it's 21 if Clemson doesn't, the average now between two games, the average would be 21 if Clemson doesn't fumble twice in the red zone, and 25.5 points without 3 missed field goals, because apparently nobody can kick field goal against Duke. whereas the other teams, they are only giving up on average 7.6 points per game. Of course, I round up, you know, on some decimal points, but
yeah.
You're talking about, again, you're talking about going from a score of 36.3 to 7.6 to now against the two teams that are most similar to FSU, going to around 21 to 14, where if you don't make a lot of those mistakes, now you've lost the game 25 to 21. So you can see that against a tougher competition, they have not really been able to rack up those yards. Talking about yards per play, they are coming in at 5.48 yards per play against Notre Dame and Clemson, 7.1 against the other teams. Big difference there. Yards per play allowed, 6.09 against Clemson and Notre Dame, drops down to 4.02 against that weaker competition. So you can see the teams that have a decent offense, and Clemson's offense is far from good.
Right.
They were able to move the ball on them. Now, again, you're talking about the havoc rate allowed against those better defenses, 12% on average, 7.5% against the other teams. And that includes NC State, who had a 14% havoc rate against them, because I feel like they really just sold out to try and stop the run because they knew the backup quarterback wasn't going to be able to throw on them. So there's a really stark contrast when you talk about comparing Notre Dame and Clemson with FSU against the other teams, because the highest ranked team in the advanced metrics that we talked about earlier, besides those two, is NC State, who's at 56, and their offense is at 95th. So their offense is hot garbage, like you said. And the defense is top 25 at 22nd. That's fair. Northwestern is at 88, and UConn is at 123rd. So those teams aren't even in the same conversation. So,
yeah. Well, even this, like, okay, like if you break down, now this is something that I think is just very indicative of the Duke's offense. As you said, boom or bust. Duke is 76th in the nation on third down conversions. They're only converting 39%. So the low end of 39% of the third down conversion. But if you go into and look at what they did against Clemson, Notre Dame, and I would even add NC State because that backup quarterback may play. Against Clemson, they were 5 of 15 on third down. Against Notre Dame, they were 6 of 15 on third down. Against NC State, with the backup quarterback, they were 1 of 9. Okay?
Bad.
So that's 12 of 39 on third down in the best games and the best teams that they've played for 30.8%. So barely 31% of third downs. Florida State has to get them off the field. Yep. And if you can get them off the field, you're going to win the game. You're just going to win the game. Again, Clemson is an aberration. Clemson gave them that game.
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, they're really close to being, you know, they would almost have one of the best records or schedule or resumes in college football. If they beat Notre Dame what we saw them do. But when you talk about that NC State game, it was, first off, it's impressive. Of course, the one year we don't get to play NC State, in like the last 20, we would beat them like a drum.
Oh, that'd be nice.
I wish, because, man, I'm not a big fan of NC State. But talking about that game, it was impressive for them to win 24-3. Now, that game, at first I was like, okay, well, maybe the backup's pretty decent. But that was a very fluky game. When you talk about Duke in that game, they only had a 29% success rate. That is awful. And then you talk about Duke. This is another thing that I'm interested in, to see how, when you have a backup quarterback, what is their pace of play?
Yeah.
Because they ran 20 less plays than they do on average in the NC State game with the backup quarterback. So maybe they're not able to push the tempo. 20 less. I think it was only 42 plays, and they ran over 60 plays in every game except for that one. So that could be something to watch too. Now, he only threw one pass in the entire second half. Yeah. So it's not like the quarterback put the team on his shoulders and just won this game through the air. 152 of their 301 total yards came on two plays.
Wow.
And one of those was a run play. One of those was a chunk pass play where the DB just got beat.
Yeah.
He just got beat. And that's going to happen. But it looked like in that game, NC State played a lot of press man coverage because they were trying to load up and put their corners on islands and be like, we're going to stop you from running the ball because we don't think he can throw it. And really, he didn't. He had what, like 4-12 for 107 yards or something like that. It was pretty terrible. They had 16 yards in the second half outside of the one explosive play. 5 of 11 drives went for less than 10 yards. And when you look at their touchdown drives, it's not like they drove down the field and shoved it down their throat and scored. Two plays, 90 yards, one play, 8 yards off an interception, and then one play for 83 yards. So, again, it was really all chunk plays.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the thing I don't want us to miss, and I know the coaches are probably on this, is harping on this, is that you're right. Those were very much chunk plays. Those runs were very much chunk runs. They still ran for 194 yards.
Yeah.
And game against NC State.
Chunk plays count. I mean, it's not like they don't count. It's just those are harder to count on happening again. You know what I mean?
Correct. Like, those are explosive plays that happen against a defense that has been typically good, but on that night was not good. Right.
Right.
So, but they still ran for 119 yards. He only connected on 4 passes. I think he threw 11, if I had that correct. No, 12. He threw 12 passes, connected on 4 for 107 yards. And but the thing I keep thinking about is, if you break the run down, a 6.46 yard per carry. And so Florida State has to make sure that we play sound gap defense, that we're in our gaps, we're communicating, we feel, you know, they run similar scheme that Florida State has been running, which is that counter, you know, the guard tackle, or the G, which is called GT counter, or the guard tight end, which is called GY counter. They run some of that. They'll run zone, you know, so they try to reach and get up to their next level. They'll try all that, the pin and pull. So Florida State should not be unfamiliar with what they're about to see. Right. I think the offensive coordinator there used to be on staff alongside with Mike Norvell. So Mike is familiar. Adam is familiar with who they're going out, though they've never coached against him. So play sound defense, stay in your gap, do what you're supposed to do. Don't try to be a superhero. And we should, I don't think we'll hold them under 100, though that would be nice.
Yeah.
But if we hold them to, you know, no more than 125 yards and we keep the passing down, it should be hopefully a fun game.
Yeah.
To celebrate.
I agree, man. And I just really do think that, like, there's so much that goes into it with who's going to be quarterback or not. But I definitely think, yeah, like, when you talk about what Florida State has been able to do against a run this year, especially true running backs. Now, yeah. I know Allen against Syracuse broke off some runs on them. I think they were really trying to guard against Schrader in that game. But yeah. They've done great against running backs. And yes. So we'll see how it goes. We'll see if Leonard does play and if he is relatively healthy. That could be an issue because we know they've struggled against some quarterbacks. So let's just kind of give some thoughts on the some last remaining thoughts on the Duke offense here. So obviously this is one thing that I noticed too. So when you talk about their sacks allowed is pretty low. They're actually only giving up less than one sack a game, tied for eighth in the country. That's great. A lot of that has to do with Riley Leonard and his ability. So when I looked it up, Riley Leonard was under pressure for 50% of his dropbacks against Clemson. Yeah, 50%. And against Notre Dame, it was 55.9%. Now, in that game, I will mention they did have an all ACC left tackle out versus Notre Dame. I don't know if he's back or not. I haven't heard about him being out. But he's been pressured a lot. Now, even against last week against NC State, Berlin was pressured 50% of his dropbacks. And NC State, man, they like I said, when I say that I thought they were coming for the run, they blitzed 71.4% of the time. They brought the absolute house. But that's why you give up the explosive plays.
Right.
Now, when you in the same breath, when you talk about explosive plays, Duke is not a really big explosive play team. They when you're talking about plays of 10+, they're 72nd in the country. And Riley Leonard's not a guy who's really going to stretch the field on you.
Right.
They don't throw it down the field a lot. When I looked it up, it's like I think less than 10% of their passes are over 20 yards. He's really lethal from 0 to 9 yards at 80% completion rate. But on their long plays on the ground, they have 36 10+ runs or runs of 10+ yards. Leonard accounted for 11 of them. So he's been a really big part of that ground game. And they're 113th in passing offense and 19th in rushing offense. So if you remove their leading rusher, that could get sketchy for that offense. I feel like Florida State could do something against them. So give me some thoughts that you have on this offense. Like we said, I think their biggest glaring weakness here, they have some receivers who are scrappy that can make some plays. I think their running backs are pretty good. You know, they're not super high end. I don't think like their receiving core is better than what you saw in LSU. I don't think their running backs are necessarily better than what you saw at Clemson. And but I think their offensive line really gives you an opportunity in this game to stop that offense because I think it's going to be overmatched. And I think the defensive line is going to be able to win the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, here's the thing I think. So, you know, if you take out Clemson, Notre Dame, NC State, they've played, they're 5-1. So they've played those other teams, Northwestern, Lafayette, whatever the terrible teams are, right? They're still 72nd in the country in yards per game. Right, they average about 388 yards. So they're 72nd. They're not blazing the field, right?
Right.
How about this one? They're 76th in the country in red zone scoring percentage. 76. So they're
great.
Yeah. So they're getting to the red zone when they do, but they're not scoring a lot. They have a terrible field goal kicker, right? They're not getting into the end zone as often. And so if you look at that offense and you think, if Riley is not playing and we don't give up the super explosive plays, how are they going to score?
Right. It's good. They're going to have to just hope for some kind of blown assignment or something, which is what you saw against NC State. And, you know, and when you talk about Riley Leonard, let's just assume he can play. So when you talk about him as a passer, 61.7% completion percentage, only 3 passing touchdowns on the year, really not a lot. Now the thing is, he's not going to blow you away with his arm. He only has a 1.5% big-time throw rate, which is one of the lowest I've seen by a starting Power 5 quarterback.
Right.
But a lot of that has to do with downfield passes. We know they don't throw the ball downfield a whole lot. Now, he only has one interception, and his turnover-worthy play rate is only 1.9%, which is very low. So that is really good. So he's safe with the ball. He's not going to give you many chances to take it away. Now, I will say when you talk about pressure, here's some more numbers for you. So he only has an 8.8% pressure to sack ratio. So as much as he gets pressured, he's hard to get on the ground. So Florida State needs to make sure if they get in the backfield, they take advantage of that. And so on the year, I thought this was kind of interesting to look up when we talk about comparing similar teams. So he's been pressured 57 times this season. Out of those 57 pressures, 38 were against Clemson and Notre Dame at 19 apiece.
Whew.
So that leads me to believe when you talk about Florida State as a defensive line that's on par with both of those schools, if not probably better to Notre Dame, probably better to close to Clemson. I think you're going to live in the backfield this game. Now, it's whether you have to deal with Leonard or whether you have to deal with Berlin, who he, I believe, was at like a 23 or around 20% pressure to sack ratio. So you're obviously better off if Berlin plays, but I think you're going to live in that backfield. You just got to make sure you get him on the ground because it's going to be crucial.
Right. Well, and the thing is to understand, Mike Elko is a defensive coach, right? And what do defensive coaches love and preach about? The run game, right?
Yep.
And so, I mean, when you look at Riley, I mean, he's only completed 79 passes. He's only thrown the ball 126 times. I mean, just contrast that with Jordan Travis, who has thrown the ball 182 times and completed 115 passes. And
he didn't. I'm about to say Riley Leonard didn't even play in the last game.
Correct, right? And so, like, you look at, like, the emphasis. Even if Riley was going to play, they're going to run the ball.
Yep.
And so Florida State defense has to make them one-dimensional. Florida State has to fight very hard to make them one-dimensional in what they're doing. And I think if you can do that, then you're going to see a lot of success on defense.
I agree. I definitely think if you can make them have to throw to beat you, and this may be a situation where it's loud, you get up by a score or two, maybe you put their backs against the wall, and we'll see. So talking about Mike Elko and the defense, we'll switch over to the defensive side of things. Man, he's a really good coach, and he's got a really good defense. And when you talked about them coming into this year, they brought back 99.5% of their yardage. So I thought the offense would really be their strength, and the defense has turned out. They had some more pieces to replace, but like you said, they brought in some players from the transfer portal that have elevated that defense.
Yep.
And it's their strength. I mean, 9.8 points per game scoring defense, which is fourth in the country. Again, we talked about that. It's a little different when you talk about the tougher teams.
Right.
Eighth best passing defense in the country, 63rd best rushing defense. Yards per play allowed, they're 11th. I mean, you go down the line. They're a little okay on third down defense, 56th in the country, allowing 37.1%. But other than that, I mean, they're second in red zone defense in the country.
Yep.
They're 67th in sacks, averaging 2.33 a game. I mean, their defense is good. There's really no way to say it. They're good. And that defensive line is legit.
Yes, it is. And let me give you two stats, Mr. Statman. They've only given up 8 touchdowns on the season. 8. Okay? Number two stat. They've only given up 5 plays of 30 yards or more. 5.
That's
they're third in the nation.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, again, we can quantify that of who they played. And I mean, that might look a little different if you broke it down. But I mean, just to think about that, 9.83 yards a game, fourth in the nation on that. They're giving up 4.44 yards. And I'm sorry, 9.83 points per game, 4.4 yards per play. They're a good defense. Like, if Duke fans, if you're listening to us right now, we're not saying you're not. You are a good defense. Yep. You have a good defense. You will challenge Florida State for a little bit.
Yeah, because like you said, I mean, they just haven't played. Like, Sam Hartman's good at quarterback, but then when you talk about what they did, they scored a lot on a terrible USC defense at Colorado, put points all over them.
Right.
And then they didn't do anything against Ohio State at home. So, you know, we'll see. This is going to be their biggest challenge on the defense as well, especially when you talk about not only playing against the best offense you've seen, but you're doing in the toughest environment where your defense now has to communicate and crowd noise. They haven't seen receivers like Florida State has. So to me, really, this game, when you talk about Florida State's offense versus that defense, it's going to come down to how well you can stop that pressure. Yep. Now, I will say that they get a lot of pressure, and they don't blitz a ton. That's the mm-hmm. crazy thing about this, because that defensive line, I don't know his name off the top of my head, but number 90, when you watched the Notre Dame game, I mean, that dude stands out on film. Every play, he's in the backfield. But so Clemson, they got 42.6% of the dropbacks were pressured for Klubnik in that game. And that was really the one thing that stood out to me. I told Clemson fans in the beginning, like, you guys might have some trouble up front. So 42.6% pressure rate against Clemson, only blitzed 25.5% of the time. Notre Dame, 54.1% pressure rate, only blitzed 37% of the time. Mm-hmm. So, again, they get pressure. Now, NC State was a little different, but they also didn't throw the ball much, so it's kind of hard to have a high rate there. It was only 29.4%, but they get pressure. So, like, if Florida State's defense or offensive line can slow down that defensive line, I feel good about what they're going to be able to do in this game.
Yeah. Yeah. The number 90 is Dwayne Carter. I mean, that boy was everywhere. Holy cow. And then also, too, Jamone Franklin, number 5. I mean, that boy's
big. I saw he did a celebration for like a sack or something. And I was like, that dude don't even fit on the TV. And I got a 70-inch TV.
Exactly. That dude's a hoss. And so he's like, they're going to. Our offensive line is going to have to play one of its best games. I mean, now. What gives me confidence is I think LSU's defensive line, I mean, that the rest of the defense is hot garbage. That defensive line was legit. That's an NFL defensive line, right? So we held up for the most part on that game. So I have confidence that we should do better. But FSU's offensive line is going to have to show up. They're going to have to communicate. We cannot have any, like, complete just whips where the dude just blows past the lineman and is in the backfield and penetrates. And like, that's just going to, if we show up and we play the game we're supposed to play and we play as well, we should in most plays neutralize that defensive line. I think that they can do that if we do that, but those boys are big.
They are, and I think they'll scheme around it, too. And I remember there was one play in the Notre Dame game where the center, he had just committed a snap infraction, so maybe he was a little focused on snapping the ball. But, man, number 90, I mean, literally just one hand, just bull rushed him in and then just swatted Hartman down. I mean, it was like that was a grown man play.
Yep.
Now, the front seven that you played against Clemson is probably the best on your schedule. So you have seen better competition. But I think really when you talk about Duke as a whole, as a team, as a defense, especially their identity under Elko, they may not have NFL caliber guys across the board like a Clemson has, but they play hard. They don't take a play off. They are very disciplined. Like you said, they're in position to make the plays. They swarm to the ball. And again, that's how you take a team that doesn't have a talent advantage and goes in and beats a team that does, is by playing sound assignment, executing football, and you play at a high level. You don't just come out flat and hope. Like they play with a dog mentality.
Right. And I mean, one of the things that you're going to see, and you can go back and watch the Clemson and Notre Dame tape, but you see this really a lot in the Notre Dame tape, is they're going to rush three, like you said, and they're going to drop. I mean, they're going to drop a lot of times they're going to drop eight into the passing lanes. They're going to play a zone. They're not afraid to play man. They'll play you man, but they're going to play a lot of this drop zone. They're going to be running. You'll see the linebackers like turn and run to their zone and then turn around to face the quarterback. So it's going to really force Jordan Travis. This is probably going to be the game where he's going to have to control his emotions and not always look for the deep shot. Now, if you throw underneath, I think one of the things that we saw in the Syracuse game that was like a moment was if you throw underneath, it allows you to then throw over the top and connect on the deep pass. We're going to have to suck Duke in with the underneath throws, let them come and tackle, let them get all like, oh, we got to bring the safety down, all that stuff. And then boom, you'll be able to hit those over the top. But Duke will flood the zones. I saw that so much. They will drop eight into the passing lanes. So you're going to have to be patient, Jordan Travis. You're going to have to be patient, Mike Norvell.
Yep. Yeah, and that's what I was talking about. They're able to get pressure with their defensive line without bringing a lot of blitz, so they can drop those guys back. And I will say in the Notre Dame game, they did have two receivers out. One was a starter, and that's Notre Dame. They did have one starting receiver out. And there was some times where, like, Sam Hartman just missed a few guys and they just dropped some passes. I mean, they had some wide open stuff. Now, I will say their tight end had a big game in that one. He's a bigger guy. Duke's secondary is not a very large group size-wise. Yeah. Yeah. So you get Johnny Wilson back. So hopefully that will help you win some one-on-ones. Also, we know Keon Coleman's 6'4", so that's going to help too. So you have size, and I think that's going to be good. So, Michael, as we get ready, let me touch on one more thing. We talked about special teams. Was Polino, their kicker, he is 6 of 10, so only 60% on field goals. So maybe that could be an advantage there. Now, I will say his long is 52, and he's 2 of 2 from 50-plus. So he's got some range there, but he's really struggled in the kicking game. So, you know, I'm sure he'll probably, like last year, we saw every kicker was like, couldn't hit the broadside of a barn and then would go 10 of 10 against Florida State. So hopefully he struggles again in this one. But as we get ready to kind of wrap this game up, are there any other thoughts on the offense, the defense, anything that really stands out to you about this game?
I just think, you know, this is a – because it's prime time, because it's the big everything, you know, Duke's going to come out inspired. And they're going to have some tricks up their sleeve. I'll bet you my bottom dollar, they're going to be ready. They're going to throw some things that Florida State hasn't seen. You know, one of the things I was banking on as I was watching back, I was like, well, you know, Florida State should be very familiar with this team, with all they do. Because Clemson, Notre Dame, they've probably pulled out their best stuff, right? Yep. But I imagine that they'll do some tendency breakers on both offense and defense. You might see a little bit more blitzing since they don't normally do that. They might try to play you man up. They might recognize the offensive line is injured, so they might try to exploit that. So I think Florida State and Norvell and then Adam Fuller will be ready for that. I'm just ready for this game to get – let's go. Let's get it done.
I know. It's huge, and the environment's going to be insane. And I've already seen some practice interviews where they said that they're ramping up the intensity this week because they know. And I think they know. And as good as Duke is, I think, like, if you're going to lose a game, it would just kind of really be a – take the wind out of your sails for it to be Duke because it's still Duke. I mean, when I talk to some Clemson fans, and most of you guys know I live in the Charlotte area, so I live around primarily Clemson fans. I was like, look – and they're like, okay, well, we outgained them. We're fine. And I was like, all right, yeah, but here's the thing. Duke's gotten better, but you guys have earned the right to talk about yourselves with Ohio State, right. Alabama, Georgia, and all that. It's still Duke. They still have two blue chip players on the whole roster. So
correct,
they get full credit for what they've done. But I still think this is a game Florida State should win. So as we get ready to round this out and make some predictions, we talked about doing this segment before the show. How does Duke win this game? What does Duke have to do to come into Duke Campbell and beat Florida State? I'll let you lead with this one.
Okay. Yeah. I would say I think the top two things Duke would have to do is they have to, if they get into the red zone, they got to score touchdowns. You cannot strike. Obviously you can't rely on your field goal kicker. You have to score touchdown. I know that's obvious for you watching out there. Like, well, duh.
Right.
No, seriously, they have to score touchdowns. They have to score touchdowns and they have to find a way to make Florida State one dimensional. And here's why. Now you would say, wait, but that would be good because they'd be throwing all over. Not if they're flooding the zones. If they're flooding the zones, Travis has proven that he's getting frustrated when they're not doing what they're supposed to do, when they're dropping balls. His accuracy has not been what it was last season. He's throwing passes behind receivers. I think that's all due to emotion and frustration right now. So if Duke can frustrate Travis, make them one-dimensional, and then in that one dimension that they have that they're frustrating, then I think they have a chance. And let me just say this, that one dimension can't be running. Cause if Florida State starts running over, game over, but if they have to force them to pass and they're able to like stop the run with that front four, front five, and they can flood the zones, then I think you might see Travis get frustrated. You might see him forcing stuff, which will lead to interceptions and basically a repeat of the Clemson game. If they can do those two things, score in the red zone and frustrate Travis, I think that is a recipe for an upset.
Yeah, I'm on the same page with you because I feel like it has to almost be, especially if you're talking about Riley Leonard doesn't play. I think they need some help. And I think that's going to come in the form of you need your defense to carry the day. You need pressure on Jordan Travis. You need to force them to make some mistakes, cause some turnovers, things like that. You know, Jordan, we know, kind of has a limp left arm. So, like, if you catch him maybe on the blind side, it's good. That's what it's going to have to be. You're going to have to hope Florida State commits some penalties. You're going to have to hope they do some uncharacteristic things. Your defense is going to have to own the day, and you're just going to have to stay efficient. You can't turn the ball over. You're going to have to be able to run the ball. And like you said, you're not going to beat a team that has now scored 30-plus points in 12 games with three-point field goals. It's just not going to happen because, I mean, they only scored 14 against Notre Dame, and they scored 28 against Clemson. But again, like we know, they got a lot of free chances with all the turnovers and things like that. So, to me, it's just you're going to have to hope Florida State makes mistakes, and you're going to have to capitalize on those because even if Riley Leonard is back in this one, if he can't run the ball, I don't think he's a good enough quarterback through the air to beat Florida State. I think if he's not at 100%, honestly, I really think it's a disservice to play him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I agree. That's how I feel about that one. I think it's, like I said, they're going to need some help in this one. But when we flip the sides here and we talk about what does Florida State have to do to win this game? So we'll give a couple keys and then we'll go into a score prediction, which I'm going to be honest, guys, I haven't really thought about a score prediction. So we're going to kind of do it on the fly here. So for me, I'm just going to give you a couple of keys that I have here. First I have is in the same vein we just talked about, limit mistakes. Duke is a very well-coached and very opportunistic team that will make you pay for those mistakes. Just look at Clemson. That's all the proof you need. They do well in penalties. They do well in turnover margin. They will let you make mistakes, and they will let you lose the game more than they're worried about winning it. So Florida State, first off, before you worry, and this sounds kind of weird, but before you worry about winning the game, don't lose the game.
That's
correct. Give them, you don't let, you know, I've used this analogy, and this is, Duke is a much better team than the other ones, but I use this analogy all the time. Like my high school coach used to say, you have to kill a gnat with a sledgehammer because you can't let them hang around. Now, right. Duke is not a gnat. They're a big bird or whatever. You know what I mean? Like they're not a gnat. They're getting in your face.
Yes.
But like, I feel like if they don't have Riley Leonard, if you can deliver the knockout blow early, I think you'll be okay. And that's why my second key to the game in this one is to set the tone.
Yep.
We know that Duke plays with an edge under Elko. I think that the intensity level when they played Clemson was off the charts compared to what Clemson brought into that game. They fly around. They play hard. They're a very physical team. They brought it to Clemson like we talked about. Duke will be a very tough environment for them to play in. Don't let them take the air out of the stadium. Don't. Yeah. Get down, have a slow second quarter, let Duke take the lead into halftime or something like that. I think if you come out, like we said, and you limit the mistakes and you punch Duke in the mouth, you get Doak rocking, I think Florida State can just play their own game at that point and just go out and beat a team that, frankly, you're better than if you play your game. So give me some keys on what you think Florida State has to do to beat Duke at home.
I'm going to give you one key. Mike Norvell says this all the time. It's not about the team across the field. It's about us. Right? Florida State, to win this game, they have to be Florida State. Yep. They have to be the dominant, punch you in the mouth first. You're not going to punch back. If you punch back, it's a tickle. We're going to ram it down your throat. And by the third quarter, Jordan Travis has a baseball hat on like this. And you're looking up at the scoreboard and you're like, how long before we can get the heck out of here? Right. That's what they did to Syracuse. It's what they eventually did to Virginia Tech. It's what they did to Southern Miss. It's what they did to LSU. Yep. Right. Let's do it again. Let's be Florida State. Be focused. Be determined. Play sound defense. Win the day. Win the play. Have, you know, Jordan take the pass that's in front of you, not the pass that you know, necessarily want, all like that. I think if they're Florida State, they should win this game.
Definitely. And before we get into score predictions, I will tell you guys real quick about our sponsor for today's show, Alumni Hall FSU. Look, you're headed to the game this weekend. You're going to Doak. You want to be, you know, to the nine. You got all the swag, as the kids say. And they probably don't even say that anymore. I'm like, probably way. I think we passed swag and now we're on drip.
You're on drip. Yeah.
Hey, look, I'm old, man. It is what it is. But if you want to get your drip on at Doak, you need to go to Alumni Hall because they got everything that you need. Hats, shirts, cups, everything you need. So if you guys go there, tell them we sent you. Use code SPEAR, and they're going to hook you up with 10% off. So not only can you look good, because you're going to buy the gear anyway. We are.
Right. That, right.
You can get it at a great price with code SPEAR. 10% off online or in-store, 1817 Thomasville Road or alumnihallfsu.com. Go check those guys out. Thank you so much for supporting our sponsor who supports us. It's been a great month for them, and we hope to keep this relationship going forward. So, Michael, it's time, my man. It's crunch time. I think that it's fair on our part to give two score predictions.
Oh, thank you. I was hoping you would say that.
Because there's two different games that could be played here. I think we'll do a with Riley Leonard and then a without Riley Leonard score prediction. So I'm gonna let you go first, matter of fact, because I haven't really thought about this. I have the one for if Riley Leonard plays, but I got to think a little bit about the other one. So go ahead with yours.
Oh, okay. Do you want both of them right now?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so if Riley Leonard plays, he's probably still a statue. I have Florida State winning 35-21. I think with him, even though he is a statue, the threat of him running is going to cause our defense to do some things they shouldn't do. But I still have them. I have Florida State winning 35-21. If he doesn't play.
It's funny because I will say I was thinking in my head, and I'm not kidding. I was thinking 34-20.
Oh, okay.
So we're right there. I'm thinking 34-20 if he does play. Yeah. So, okay. So if he doesn't play.
Now, if he doesn't play, I have Florida State like mid-third quarter. Jordan Travis has a baseball hat on. 38-14.
Yeah, I could see, like, honestly, their defense is pretty decent. They haven't given up a ton of points this year.
Right.
I don't know that Florida State's going to score, like, 40 points. So, I mean, obviously, the quarterback can change how many possessions you get and things like that. So, you could bump it up. And I said 34-20 with Riley Leonard. I would go, man, just without him, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough sledding. I'm thinking something like 41-17, maybe. I think you could also have some garbage time there. You know, maybe 7 points, maybe 41-10 or something late in the third. I just think without him, you know, I just don't see much. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you got some experience last week for NC State for the backup. That's going to help his confidence going forward. But, you know, we thought the same thing with Kyron Drones. We thought he would get that, and he just shut him down. So I think without him, Florida State's in good shape. Yep. With him, it'll be more of a test. But like you said, he's going to be a statue back there. I don't think he's going to be near 100%. I think Florida State will get it done either way. In the biggest game so far of the year inside Duke Campbell Stadium, that is, against a ranked Duke team. So, man, I'm really excited about this. I know you're going to be there. I'm sad. I'm going to see if SeatGeek will let me unsell my tickets before then, and who knows if I might end up down there some way or another. But with that being said, Michael, I know we got to kind of wrap this thing up, but any final thoughts on this weekend? Just anything as a whole that you want to say before we cut out of here?
Man, it's going to be rocking. Florida State fans, show up. Man, be ready to scream. If you see me there, come say hi. We'll take pictures. We love you guys. Thank you so much for your support of Plant the Spear. Make sure you guys subscribe.
Yeah, definitely. And so you guys just enjoy your time in Tallahassee. We are going to, it's going to be a late night, but we're going to do a live post-game show like we did for LSU. And we're going to be on here. I'm going to try and get, you know, cell phone services are gone awful at Doak, but we're going to try and get Michael live from Doak to join us as well for a little bit. So you guys make sure to be on the lookout for that live post-game show Saturday night, just a few minutes after the game. We got to post some score graphics and then we'll jump on here, but we'll give you guys a heads up. So make sure you tune in for that. And we'll have a preview written article coming out in the next couple of days. You guys can check that out as well. So again, like Michael said, thank you so much for tuning in. Like and subscribe to help the channel grow. We appreciate everybody in our audience. So drop your score prediction in the comments below. I want to see what you guys think. If you think we're crazy or whatnot, I would love to see that. So with that being said, guys, we're going to go ahead and wrap this episode up. I appreciate everybody tuning in. And as always, go Noles.
Go Noles.